love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of Man may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then, after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him." After saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died, and for your sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." When she said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she arose quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, Unbind him and let him go. All right, apparently the babies don't want Lazarus to come out of the grave. Isn't that a crazy story? Isn't that crazy? This story has always moved me so deeply. And I think the emotional level of the story is pretty obvious right on the surface. But I have to confess to you that I come tonight with more questions than answers. I think this story is also shrouded with a sense of mystery. There's a number of odd things about the passage that John, I think, is poking us with quite intentionally to get us to wonder and to get us to think a little bit more and to examine more closely this Jesus that we're hearing about. Consistent with everything that we've been studying in John so far, this is a sign. It's one of the seven signs. These miracles, these wonderful deeds that Jesus did that are meant to catch our attention and prove to us who he was, and to demonstrate his power and his character, that he is both the Messiah and, in fact, God incarnate himself, so that we might believe. John wrote specifically, this is the purpose, this is why I'm writing this down, is so that you might believe in this man. Also consistent with John's style and project that we've seen so far is that this is a deeply personal story. It names names. It's specific people. And John seems to be particularly interested not in the big movements of Jesus and the big crowds and the political this and that, but in these episodes, these single episodes where Jesus comes face to face with an individual and speaks his name and shows that individual personal love. And I loved Ben's teaching from a couple months ago about that this is a collection of people's personal testimonies and that each individual has a testimony. You, in this pew tonight, have a personal story of what God has done in your life in the person of Jesus Christ, that he has come to you and he's looked you in the eye and he's spoken your name. And here I think we see that same character. We have this family that Jesus loves, three siblings, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And Mary, in fact, has another episode. Okay, now one of the first things that we should notice, okay, is that Mary's story, interestingly enough, her interaction with Jesus isn't at this point in the gospel. So if you're reading this gospel for the first time and you get down to this verse, okay, it was Mary, verse 2, who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. That story is actually in the next chapter, chapter 12. Okay, so it's a little bit odd, all right? If you were reading this for the first time, you'd say, wait, who's that? Okay, Now, that signals to us a couple things. One is that this book isn't chronological. Okay, it's a collection of stories, and if you try to work out, okay, which one happened first and how does this fit into the chronology with the other books, you're going to get confused. Okay, it also signals to us that perhaps Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were well known to the early Christian community, and that this story of Mary was already widely known, and that and this is easy to imagine. Imagine in 80 AD, there are only a handful of small Christian communities in the biggest cities in the world, and that those small Christian communities were definitely smaller than the number of people in this room right now. Okay? And so it's likely that if you were reading this gospel, you would maybe know Mary personally, right? Or at least know someone who knows her personally. Think about how tight-knit we are as a community, you know? And if this story had happened to one of the people in this room, we would know about it, right? It's also a little maybe odd that in all the other gospels, however, she's not named. She's not identified. Okay, she's just some sinful woman that comes and weeps at Jesus' feet and anoints him with the ointment, right? Also, in John, John is the only gospel that records the Lazarus story, which is a little bit odd because this is a big deal, right? Jesus raises somebody from the dead, and all the other gospel writers, they want to show who Jesus is, right? And so you would think that they would include the Lazarus story, right? This has led some people to speculate that maybe while the earlier Gospels were being written, there was some persecution going on, and there was a concern to protect the identity of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, because perhaps, right, if you're a Roman governor or a high-profile Pharisee that's trying to quash this new religion, one of the main things you might want to do is find the guy that Jesus raised from the dead, that this is a pretty famous story, find out where he is and, eliminate him. Okay, so maybe by this time, we know that the Gospel of John was written much later than the other Gospels, maybe the situation has calmed down, or maybe Mary, Martha, and Lazarus are already dead, and so it doesn't matter anymore. Okay, but in any case, that we have this suggestion right off the bat that this is an already known story to the audience. All right, now there's another slightly puzzling detail right here near the beginning. Look at verses 5 and 6. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So, when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Now, I think in the past, and growing up, I had just sort of glossed over that very troublesome word, so. I had always read this story, in fact, I think until the last couple weeks, as Jesus loved them, and he wanted to prevent Lazarus from suffering unnecessarily, but in spite of that love, he had a bigger project going on, right? In spite of his concern for Lazarus, his love for his personal friend, his desire to save his friend from suffering, he wanted to also pursue the glory of God. And he wanted to also pursue our faith. And so he was willing to let his friend suffer and die for the sake of something bigger, right? For the sake of performing this sign that we might believe, okay? But that's not what the text says. It doesn't say, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, but when he heard that Lazarus was ill. It doesn't say he loved Lazarus, and in spite of this fact, he delayed. It says he loved them, and so, when he heard that he was ill, he delayed. Okay? So we have this indication that it's precisely because Jesus loved Lazarus and his sisters that he delays long enough for Lazarus to die. It's precisely because he loved his friend that he knowingly chose to allow his friend to suffer and to die temporarily, mind you, okay? But allowed his friend to suffer and die precisely because he loved Lazarus. Precisely because he was granting Lazarus the honor of entering into a participation and an imitation of his own love. Precisely because that perhaps is what's good for Lazarus. And only Jesus could know this and see this. And only Jesus has that kind of love. The love that would allow his friend to die and then call him out of that death. It's amazing. It's amazing. Now look at this next bit. This is also sort of puzzled me a little bit. When Martha comes, notice too, before I say that, we have a little bit of a mirror image of what we learn here about Martha and Mary and their relationship. Don't you just see their character and their interaction? In Luke, we saw Martha is the active sister. She's taking care of the house. She's putting together the dinner. She's serving the disciples and wants Mary to help. Mary's sitting at Jesus' feet, right? Again, here, Martha's the active one. You know, she's like, you know, knows that Jesus is coming, is apparently aware of his itinerary, and she goes out to meet him, finds their campsite, you know, goes and is kind of she's active, right? She's out there. Whereas Mary is, I don't know what the word is for it, but she's much more held back. And what Mary says to Jesus is also much simpler than what Martha says, although it expresses much the same thing. But notice this little bit with Martha. She says, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." Verse 22, "But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." So that's interesting. She has some sort of something. She doesn't quite say exactly what she expects Jesus to do, but she is expressing a confidence in him. And Jesus says to her, "Your brother will rise again." He comes right out and says it. He tells her straight up what's going to happen. But notice, even though she's the one that initiated this, and with that, even now, I think she has some kind of hope that something's going to be done, right? But even now, she kind of backs it off. She backs off that confidence a little bit. And she says, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Is that what you mean? Is that what you mean? Now, this is interesting. This is the big difference, of course, between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Sadducees did not believe in the general resurrection, right? And of course, the dad joke is that's why they were so sad, you see. But the Pharisees, right, they did believe in the general resurrection. And this was a big controversy at the time, okay? So this isn't Mary, or this isn't Martha expressing some particular confidence in just Jesus's teaching. She's saying, okay, yeah, I've been instructed in Judaism, According to the teachings of the rabbis, the Pharisees were the dominant school of the rabbis. The Sadducees were actually a fairly small group. Okay? And she said, okay, I believe in the general resurrection. I affirm that. I believe that on the last day, we will all rise. And I have that hope for my brother. Is that what you mean? But notice what Jesus does. He is interested in trading, in exchanging, in shifting her sort of abstract religious belief in a doctrine that she had been taught her whole life from the rabbis, this doctrine of the resurrection. He's interested in exchanging that for himself. And he says, no, that's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection and the life. This hope, this comfort that you have in seeing your brother again is not some hope in a distant, abstract dogma. It is a hope in a man that is looking you in the face, that is right here, right now. And this resurrection is a here and now thing. And he closes that by asking, do you believe this? That word believe, that's the verb for faith, right? Do you trust this? Do you have faith? Have you met me, Martha? I think essentially what he's asking is, do you really know who I am? And I think her response is telling. She doesn't just say, yes, I believe in this doctrine, this statement that you just said, but she says, I believe that you are the Messiah. And more than the Messiah, the Son of God who is coming into the world. That's a profound statement of Christology, in fact, there. Who is coming into the world? How can you come into the world unless you exist in some sense outside the world, unless you in fact precede the world, unless in fact you are the ground of the universe, the cause of there being a universe at all? Something that's inside of the universe can't enter into the universe, right? Only God is in a position to come into the world, right? And so I think Martha gets it perhaps way more than any of the disciples at this point, right? The disciples are like, oh man, he doesn't know what he's doing. Those Jews are all crawling all over that place. And if we go up there, we're doomed. And Thomas is like, well, we better go die with him, right? But Martha, in this moment, gets it and has a profound insight into who she's talking to. Now, there's a parallel here, an interesting parallel, with Luke 16. So let's turn over there. I translate this with a bunch of my Latin students. So any Mars Hill Latin students who have gone through know this story pretty well. Starting in verse 19. There was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen, and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate was laid a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who desired to be fed with what fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, even the dogs came and licked his sores. The poor man died and was carried by an angel to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried, And in Hades, being in torment, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham far off and Lazarus at his side. And he called out, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the end of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in anguish in this flame. But Abraham said, Child, remember that you in your lifetime received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in anguish. And besides all this, between us and you a great chasm has been fixed, in order that those who would pass from here to you may not be able, and none may cross from there to us. And he said, Then I beg you, Father, to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, so that he may warn them, lest they also come into this place of torment. But Abraham said, They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, then they will repent. He said to them, If they don't hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced if someone should rise from the dead. Okay, now, this is interesting. This is obviously a parable. This is not history. It's not something that happens. It has all the trappings of a parable. And we're not supposed to take that story literally. There's not literally some sort of chasm, you know, between heaven and hell where people like shout across, right? It's a metaphor. Okay. But this is a very interesting, and it's a unique parable because in no other parable are any of the characters named. Only in this parable do we have a named character, and he's named Lazarus. Okay, also keep in mind, in the Gospel of Luke, Luke leaves out the story of Lazarus. Okay? And what's the point of the parable? The point of the parable is, look, even if someone should rise from the dead, those with hard hearts who don't repent in their lifetime on the evidence of the scriptures and on the evidence of Moses, they're not gonna change their ways even if somebody should be sent back from the dead. Right? And of course, what do we see exactly that in John? We see a guy named Lazarus who actually is sent back from the dead, quite literally. And do we see crowds of Pharisees falling down at Jesus' feet, suddenly stricken? Because this is a sure, undeniable sign of God's presence in the earth. A sure, undeniable sign of Jesus' authority. No. No. We see only his disciples moved by this sign. Right? So, it's in fact, the parable is fulfilled. In the parable, it's like, oh no, that can't happen and I'm not going to do it. But we see such a merciful God that he does send Lazarus back, right? For precisely the reason of giving evidence, of giving a sign, of giving a witness, of a